That evening, Otto had a touch of sunstroke and went to bed early with a headache. Peter and I walked up to the village alone. In the Bavarian cafe, where the band makes a noise like hell unchained, Peter bawled into my ear the story of his life. Peter is the youngest of a family of four. He has two sisters, both married. One of the sisters lives in the country and hunts. The other is what the newspapers call a popular society hostess. Peter's elder brother is a scientist and explorer. He has been on expeditions to the Congo, the New Hebrides, and the Great Barrier Reef. He plays chess, speaks with the voice of a man of 60, and has never, to the best of Peter's belief, performed the sexual act. The only member of the family with whom Peter is at present on speaking terms is his hunting sister, but they seldom meet because Peter hates his brother-in-law. Peter was delicate as a boy. He did not go to a preparatory school, but when he was 13, his father sent him to a public school. His father and mother had a row about this, which lasted until Peter, with his mother's encouragement, developed heart trouble and had to be removed at the end of his second term. Once escaped, Peter began to hate his mother for having petted and coddled him into a funk. She saw that he could not forgive her, and so Peter was the only one of her children whom she cared for. She got ill herself and soon afterwards died. It was too late to send Peter back to school again, so Mr. Wilkinson engaged a tutor. The tutor was a very high church young man who intended to become a priest. He took cold baths in winter and had crimpy hair and a Grecian jaw. Mr. Wilkinson disliked him from the first, and the elder brother made satirical remarks, so Peter threw himself passionately onto the tutor's side. The two of them went for walking tours in the Lake District and discussed the meaning of the sacrament amidst austere moorland scenery. This kind of talk got them, inevitably, into a complicated emotional tangle, which was abruptly unraveled one evening during a fearful row in a barn. Next morning, the tutor left, leaving a 10-page letter behind him. Peter meditated suicide. He heard later, indirectly, that the tutor had grown a mustache and gone out to Australia. So Peter got another tutor and finally went up to Oxford. Hating his father's business and his brother's science, he made music and literature into a religious cult. For the first year, he liked Oxford very much indeed. He went out to tea parties and ventured to talk. To his pleasure and surprise, people appeared to be listening to what he said. It wasn't until he had done this often that he began to notice their air of slight embarrassment. "Somehow or other," said Peter, "I always struck the wrong note." Meanwhile, at home, in the big Mayfair house, with its four bathrooms and garage for three cars, where there was always too much to eat, the Wilkinson family was slowly falling to pieces like something gone rotten. Mr. Wilkinson, with his diseased kidneys, his whiskey, and his knowledge of handling men, was angry and confused and a bit pathetic. He snapped and growled at his children when they passed near him, like a surly old dog. At meals, nobody ever spoke. They avoided each other's eyes and hurried upstairs to write letters full of hatred and satire to their intimate friends. Only Peter had no friend to write to. He shut himself up in his tasteless, expensive bedroom and read and read. And now it was the same at Oxford. Peter no longer went to tea parties. He worked all day, and just before the examinations, he had a nervous breakdown. The doctor advised a complete change of scene, other interests. Peter's father let him play at farming for 6 months in Devonshire. Then he began to talk of the business. Mr. Wilkinson had been unable to persuade any of his other children to take even a polite interest in their source of their incomes. They were all unassailable in their different worlds. One of his daughters was about to marry into the peerage. The other frequently hunted with the Prince of Wales. His elder son read papers to the Royal Geographical Society. Only Peter hadn't any justification for his existence. The other children behaved selfishly, but knew what they wanted. Peter also behaved selfishly, and didn't know. However, at the critical moment, Peter's uncle, his mother's brother, died. This uncle lived in Canada. He had seen Peter once as a child and had taken a fancy to him, so he left him all his money, not very much, but enough to live on comfortably. Peter went to Paris and began studying music. His teacher told him that he would never be more than a good second-rate amateur, but he only worked all the harder. He worked merely to avoid thinking, and had another nervous breakdown, less serious than at first. At this time, he was convinced that he would soon go mad. He paid a visit to London and found only his father at home. They had a furious quarrel on the first evening. Thereafter, they hardly exchanged a word. After a week of silence and huge meals, Pete had a mild attack of homicidal mania. All through breakfast, he couldn't take his eyes off a pimple on his father's throat. He was fingering the bread knife. Suddenly, the left side of his face began to twitch. It twitched and twitched, so that he had to cover his cheek with his hand. He felt certain that his father had noticed this, and was intentionally refusing to remark on it. Was, in fact, deliberately torturing him. At last, Peter could stand it no longer. He jumped up and rushed out of the room, out of the house, into the garden, where he flung himself face downwards on the wet lawn. There he lay, too frightened to move. After a quarter of an hour, the twitching stopped. That evening, Peter walked along Regent Street and picked up a whore. They went back together to the girl's room and talked for hours. He told her the whole story of his life at home, gave her £10, and left her without even kissing her. Next morning, a mysterious rash appeared on his left thigh. The doctor seemed at a loss to explain its origin, but prescribed some ointment. The rash became fainter, but did not altogether disappear until last month. Soon after the Regent Street episode, Peter also began to have trouble with his left eye. For some time already, he had played with the idea of consulting a psychoanalyst. His final choice was an orthodox Freudian with a sleepy, ill-tempered voice and very large feet. Peter took an immediate dislike to him and told him so. The Freudian made notes on a piece of paper, but did not seem offended. Peter later discovered that he was quite uninterested in anything except Chinese art. They met 3 times a week, and each visit cost 2 guineas. After 6 months, Peter abandoned the Freudian and started going to a new analyst, a Finnish lady with white hair and a bright conversational manner. Peter found her easy to talk to. He told her, to the best of his ability, everything he had ever done, ever said, ever thought, or ever dreamed. Sometimes, in moments of discouragement, he told her stories which were absolutely untrue, or anecdotes collected from casebooks. Afterwards, he would confess to those lies, and they would discuss his motives for telling them and agree they were very interesting. On red letter nights, Peter would have a dream, and this gave them a topic of conversation for the next few weeks. The analysis lasted nearly 2 years and was never completed. This year, Peter got bored with the Finnish lady. He heard of a good man in Berlin. Well, why not? At any rate, it would be a change. It was also an economy. The Berlin man only cost 15 marks a visit. And you're still going to him? I asked. No, Peter smiled. Can't afford it, you see. Last month, a day or two after his arrival, Peter went out to Wannsee to bathe. The water was still chilly and there were not many people about. Peter had noticed a boy who was turning somersaults by himself on the sand. Later the boy came up and asked for a match. They got into conversation. It was Otto Novak. Otto was quite horrified when I told him about the analyst. What? He asked. You give that man 15 marks a day just for letting you talk to him? You give me 10 marks and I'll talk to you all day and all night as well? Peter began to shake all over with laughter, flushing scarlet and wringing his hands.